Hey, welcome back to 7-Minute Books. I'm Sam, and today we're talking about David Attenborough's A Life on Our Planet. Sophie, I have to ask, did this book make you feel hopeful or completely terrified?
Honestly, both. Attenborough has spent nearly a century documenting the natural world, and this book is his witness statement. It's not just a nature documentary in text form. It's a personal account of what we've lost and what we can still save.
Right. And he opens with something that surprised me. He goes to Chernobyl, of all places, and finds it strangely hopeful. The abandoned city is overgrown, and wildlife has returned. It's like nature saying, "Give me a chance, and I'll recover."
That's the perfect frame for the whole book. He's not saying we haven't done terrible damage, but he's also showing that the planet is resilient. The question is whether we'll actually give it the opportunity to heal.
And he traces his own life to show how fast things changed. He was born in 1926, when there were about 2 billion people on Earth. Now we're pushing 8 billion. And he's watched the places he loved as a young man just empty out.
Like Borneo. He first went there in the 50s, and it was almost all ancient rainforest. Orangutans, rhinos, everything. By the time he went back, most of it was palm oil plantations. The orangutans were hanging on in tiny fragments, and the rhinos were gone.
That's the kind of story that just sticks with you. And it's not just the forests. He remembers diving in the 50s and seeing this incredible abundance of marine life. Now, industrial fishing has cut fish populations by more than a third, and some big species are down over 90%.
So, what's the root cause? He's careful not to blame individuals, which I appreciated. He says the problem is systemic. Our economic system is built on endless growth on a finite planet, which is mathematically impossible. We're hitting the limits.
So he's not telling us to all go live in caves and stop having kids. He's saying we need to redesign civilization to work with nature, not against it. He calls it rewilding the world.
And he gives concrete examples that it works. In Europe, forests are coming back. Marine protected areas show fish populations can recover. Costa Rica lost most of its forests, then made a national commitment to conservation, and now over half the country is forested again.
That's genuinely inspiring. But he also says the key is energy. We have to move off fossil fuels to renewables like solar and wind. And here's the thing that got me. Renewable energy is already cheaper than coal and gas in most places. The tech exists. What's missing is the will.
And food.
He makes a big point about industrial agriculture being one of the biggest drivers of destruction. We need to shift toward plant-based diets, regenerative agriculture, and vertical farming. Plus, we waste about a third of all food we produce. That's land and resources for nothing.
And population. He's careful to say it has to be voluntary, not forced. The best way is to educate women and give them access to family planning. When that happens, birth rates drop naturally. It's about freedom, not control.
Right.
And he ties it all together with this idea of interconnectedness. The health of the oceans affects the atmosphere. The soil affects our food. The forests affect the climate. You can't solve one problem in isolation. We have to see the big picture.
And that means changing our mindset. Instead of seeing nature as a resource to exploit, we see it as a partner. Instead of measuring progress by GDP, we measure it by the well-being of people and the planet. That's a huge shift.
He also talks about the Holocene, that stable climate period that allowed civilization to develop. Now we're pushing the planet into an unknown state. But he's not a pessimist. He's seen too much beauty and resilience to give up.
So what's his vision for the future? He imagines the year 2100, and it's actually pretty beautiful. Renewable energy everywhere, forests covering more land than today, oceans teeming with fish, a stabilized population around 9 billion. People living in harmony with nature.
And he says that's not a utopian fantasy. It's based on what we know is possible. The question is whether we'll choose to pursue it. He ends with humility and gratitude, reminding us we're part of nature, not separate from it.
The part that got me most was when he said we've been given an extraordinary gift, and it's our responsibility to pass it on in good condition. That really hit home. This isn't just about saving pandas. It's about saving ourselves.
Exactly. And that's why I think this book is so important. It's not comfortable, but it's inspiring. He's seen the worst, but he's also seen the best, and he believes we can change. The decision is ours.
My biggest takeaway is that hope is a choice. We can look at the facts and despair, or we can look at the resilience of nature and the examples of recovery and decide to act. Attenborough has given us a roadmap. Now we have to walk it.
And honestly, if you want to go deeper, the whole library's over at 7minutebooks.com/app with over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language. It's $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 for lifetime access. This book is a witness statement, a warning, and a love letter to the natural world. Attenborough's message is clear. We have the power to change, so let's do it before it's too late. We'll see you in the next one.